Salvi gets it over shortstop. Here comes Junior. And Blanco is going to be out at third without a slide. But the run will score.
Up the middle, and it's into center field. Marlowe is in to score. Caballero, he rushes home, and he scores standing. Ty France with two outs in the top of the 10th.
Valiant effort by the boys in blue, but the Royals, after digging themselves a hole down 7-0, lose in extra innings at the K last night to the Mariners 10-8. Royals starter Jordan Lyles apparently thought it was home run derby in the fourth. Gave up three homers in the span of four batters, four homers in the fifth inning, or in the fourth inning, and also a double. He also had an error, and Seattle scored seven runs, but somehow, some way, he doesn't get the loss. And Zach Greinke and Brady Singer are going, please, someone? But Lyles doesn't deserve any more than 13 that he's got. He was going to get the loss, but the Royals rally. You heard the grand slam by Bobby Witt Jr. Mikael Garcia, now a 17-game winning hitting streak. And the Royals got to within two there by the bottom of the fifth. The Mariners go up three. The Royals eventually come back, tie the game, as you heard. But Darren Blanco with a base-running error and not even sliding in the third, that was huge, as the Royals could have maybe won the game in a walk-off at the bottom of the ninth for the second straight night. Instead, Mariners scored two in the 10th. Newly acquired, was it Tyler or Tucker? Davidson. I think it's Tucker, isn't it? He got the loss last night in the 10th. Matt Kuchera, the manager of the Royals, on the comeback, and proud of his squad for coming back, if I can get this to work.
These guys, they don't quit. There's some good arms, too, that they battled back against. You know, usually, you know, when we see it the other way, big innings have something, you know, there are a couple walks in there, tough at-bats. But just to chip away, you know, Bobby hit the grand slam, got us right back into it, and then it kind of settled down there a little bit. But the ninth inning was exciting.
Royals are now 39-82. Mariners are 64-55. Game three of the four-game set at the K tonight at 7:10. James MacArthur is the opener tonight as the Royals don't have enough starting pitchers to actually stay. They have starting pitchers. So, but anyway, Bobby Witt Jr. is playing great. Garcia's hitting the ball well. Some of the young guys starting to come around. Michael Massey's coming around getting some key hits for the Royals. That's a good sign. But still, ultimately, where this team will go in the future, if they're going to contend and win the division or get a wild card, they have to develop starting pitching, because they're not going to go out and sign Gerrit Cole. It's just not going to happen. They're not going to go get Shohei Ohtani. It's not happening. They don't have the budget, nor are they going to spend that money in free agency. So they have to figure something out. May Cole Reagans is an answer. He's looked good for a couple of starts. Last start, not so good, but hey, nobody's perfect. You know, Brady Singer looks like he fixed some things from early in the season. Okay, there's two, maybe two. Now, will the Royals do the rest of the way? Because that still means they've got three other starters. Plus, you need more starters than that, because you go through a 162-game season. You're not going to get through it unscathed. So the Royals have a lot of work to do, but they have been playing some fun and exciting baseball. Win or lose, the games have been very exciting. Another one last night. All right, local sports, Dusty. Sports practices going on. We've got our schedule all set up for now, and everything else I'll let you take over.
Yeah, practices again continuing on as teams get prepped for 2023 fall sports. High school football season starts on September 1st, and looking forward to bringing you the action on Katy County 94, Z96.3 Through the Lake, and the Beloit Trojan Channel. All the regular season Beloit football games for sure, streaming online there at ncksports.com. And yeah, we do have our initial plans for high school football broadcast schedule. We always say that schedule subject to change, just in case something would come up that we would change anything on that. But the initial plan is posted there at katycountry94.com actually this morning. Graphics on our social media on Facebook and Twitter, so you can find those as well and find out where we're expecting to be here during the fall for high school football. So stay tuned for all that. And again, we'll have our locker room chats with football coaches as we normally do during the season as well. We'll give you more information on that upcoming, and getting set for the start of the season. Again, September 1st is the first night of high school football here in North Central Kansas. Other area teams are going to get going, and here at the end of this month, they'll have some competitions for tennis, girls tennis, volleyball, cross country, all starting this month as well. So looking forward to all that. And again, we'll have more from the coaches as we get closer to competition time as well.
So Stockton is part of the NPL.
So the NPL is going to look a little different this year. The Chase left. They're in this, the Central Prairie League now. Wilson doesn't have a school anymore, and Stockton has joined the Northern Plains League this year. So they lose two but gain one. So you're at 13 total schools, really 12 teams for most of the team sports, because St. John's and Tipton play together in football, basketball, volleyball. So, yeah, it's actually an ideal number for like a league tournament with 12 that'll be in there now. So yeah, 13 schools in the league, and Stockton joining this year after a long time in the Mid-Continent League.
They're awesome at football. Back when I was in school, they were Joel McReynolds, Brandon Wiedenhaft, Phil Wilson, a tremendous coach, and it's amazing over the years how they've fallen off.
Yeah,
and really in other sports too, they're pretty good in basketball as well. The girls' basketball team made state not too many years ago. I mean, the boys' teams made it actually a few years ago. Then didn't even have a team. Was it last year? The year before? They didn't even have a team.
The year before last, yeah.
So yeah, it's just, you know, some of those towns, you know, not only in our area but further west, continue to get smaller, less population, less enrollment. And thus, you have schools going from 11-man, 8-man football, then eventually 6-man football in some situations, or the schools closed down. You talked about Wilson and so forth and so on. And I know that Stockton isn't the equivalent of a Silver Lake or a Rossville or a St. Mary's, but the Big Seven League merged, and this was a gigantic story. And they put out, they released stuff on social media. They had press releases and everything else. A lot of people didn't know that Stockton even joined the NPL. I don't know if it was a big,
it's like
secret
word of mouth here that
it's like, shouldn't there have been some kind of release by the league saying, "Hey, we've added a new member."
Yeah.
Or shouldn't Stockton be like, "Hey, we're a member of the NPL"? I didn't see any of that. Maybe there was, and I missed it.
I'm sure Stockton did at some point, but I don't follow Stockton, right?
Right, like, right. Yeah, you would have thought that that would have been a bigger deal, but then again, you know, maybe it's not, because it's just Stockton.
Yeah,
I don't know. But anyway, that'll be a little bit different from that standpoint. And then the NPL basketball tournament will be, what did we say the other day? There'd be 11 then?
So there'll be 12 now with Stockton.
Yeah. See, 12 is a good number.
Yeah.
12 is a good number. 13 is an odd number. But 12, you could actually have, of course, who knows how they're going to do it. But, you know, to me, the 12 is easy. Your top four seeds get byes and you play in.
Yeah, and that's what they've been doing with the league tournament. So I don't think they would change that.
That would be perfect.
Because they just go
play in, but now you don't have that odd number.
Top three seeds would get byes, or top five seeds actually got byes, and then they
Now it'll be four.
Yeah, and so.
Works for me. That makes sense to me. And
however it worked. That was actually, it was just the top three in basketball before, because they would play four against 13 and then make it. It worked just the same way a 12-1 will work in the end, but it actually helps the back part of that bracket.
Right, the consolation side.
With the consolation, to where they can actually play like round robin and actually play everybody that was there. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. And I think, you know, typically if Stockton can be anything like what they've been in the past, and especially I would say on the girls' side, it does add a pretty good level of competition in most years, but Stockton, you know, girls even have fallen off just a little bit. So we'll see how that all plays out.
I heard the NPL girls and boys basketball tournaments are going to be played in Vegas. Everybody wants to play in Vegas, from what I hear. So I hear they can be moved from Lincoln to Las Vegas, not that far away. Chiefs head coach Andy Reid said yesterday, turning our attention to the Chiefs' latest local sports information, ncksports.com. Andy Reid said tight end Jody Fortson is going to have shoulder surgery. He has been placed on injury reserve list, out for the season. Third straight year has been on IR. Last year he came back in week 16. That's a bummer, because it's a guy that tall target, talented, very good blocker. It hurts the Chiefs on special teams, by the way, because I'm watching the replays of Sky Moore returning that punt when everybody was nervous as heck in the AFC title game. Tied 20-20, Chiefs got to stop. Chris Jones gets a sack, and Sky Moore was the only guy left standing health-wise to return a punt. And you know who was helping lead the way for him to get a nice return? Jody Fortson.
Fortson, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's not a major loss, but offensively it's not as big a loss, but it hurts on special teams. Andy Reid also had wide receiver injuries yesterday. All of a sudden they started dropping like flies. Justin Ross, a knee, hamstring, shin. Looks like he's going to be okay. Amir Smith-Marset, who's probably not going to make the team, strained groin. And Nico, I can't pronounce his name, Ribgio or whatever, who played pretty well against the Saints. He had a shoulder dislocation. Went up for a ball, came down, landed on his shoulder. So, those are all guys. Well, first of all, we don't know if any of the guys are going to make the team. I think Justin Ross will. I don't think the others will.
Yeah.
So it's not major per se, but at the same time, that's three injuries to the wide receiver core in the same day.
Can we, like, not let anybody play Saturday on that field in Arizona?
Oh, yeah. No kidding.
Like, important.
That's how Butker got hurt.
Just, yeah.
Start the year.
I was like, let's not even let Butker kick on Saturday.
Yeah, let's just go ahead and lay Mahomes
with the
on
history
the
of that field that the Chiefs had last season.
That was not good. And when there's the Chiefs, other teams had problems there, too.
Yeah.
The Indianapolis Colts ended their quarterback competition after one preseason game. Well, you're like, well, of course, you know, they got some veteran ready to go. No, they're going to go with their rookie, the fourth overall pick, Anthony Richardson of Florida, whose stock just shot way up. He was up and down at Florida, and he said yes to himself. He was shocked.
Yeah.
So the Colts basically are saying there's no point in slow playing this. We're going to take our lumps. We're going with the rookie quarterback. Gardner Minshew was brought in on a one-year deal. He probably thought he was going to start for a while. And so they're going to focus on developing him, getting a lot of reps. The final weeks of camp, the last two preseason games. And Shane Steichen, who used to be a coordinator there offensively for the Eagles, he's, I think, his second year now with the Colts. It allows him more time to tailor offense to Richardson's dynamic dual threat ability. He can run, he can throw, and we see this with quarterbacks now. There's not a lot of quarterbacks that are just, you know, statues sitting in the pocket that, you know, either sack them or they get rid of it and they do good things. And that's kind of how Tom Brady was. That's how Peyton Manning was. That's how Joe Montana was. Those guys are kind of becoming a extinct species, the sit-in-the-pocket type of quarterback. So Anthony Richardson is just an extension of all these other quarterbacks that are dual threats, like a Lamar Jackson. I mean, Mahomes is a dual threat, too, sometimes. You don't think of him as a dual threat, but he scrambles quite a bit and makes some gigantic plays. And we see Josh Allen. He's a dual threat quarterback. I mean, there's, you know, Joe Burrow would be maybe more of the old school sit in the pocket type of guy, not scrambling all over the place. But he is more mobile than people think. The position has changed over the years. And Anthony Richardson, be interested to see what he does, C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young, because all three of those guys aren't just sit in the pocket guys. Bryce Young certainly can move around. Stroud isn't known for running around as much, but he ran around, made some good plays against Georgia when they should have won the playoff game. If Marvin Harrison Jr. doesn't get hurt, I still think Ohio State is your national champion, and they beat Georgia. Instead, Georgia's going for a three-peat this year. So, interesting how this will all play out. We'll find out over time. Not now, not next week, not a year from now, but 5 years from now, we'll know Stroud, Young, and Richardson. Maybe they're all duds.
Yeah.
Maybe Richardson will be the best one out of this whole thing, and he's a late up-and-comer. But he has a ton of ability, and he is a starting quarterback day one for the Colts, which has surprised some people.
Yeah, history would show that, like, not all three of them are probably going to pan out to be studs, right?
I would say one. Yeah, you'd be lucky
and,
if one.
And superstars. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that does all play out, because there's a lot of talk about a lot of different guys, and there always is, right? Mm-hmm. Like, who do you want to pick here? Who should be the number one pick? And then you go through the progressions, and I think some people were kind of surprised, even though they knew that Richardson was going up the boards, that he got picked that high. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to be very interesting to see how it all plays out and see where those three guys will end up.
C.J. Stroud is battling Davis Mills with the Texans for the starting job. Bryce Young probably will be the day one starter for the Carolina Panthers, but his offensive line was horrendous the other day. If that offensive line is that bad this year, Bryce Young will not survive the year. I can assure you of that. That's got to get better. And I remember Troy Aikman. His first year was thrown into the fire, and boy, he got the heck. Him and Peyton Manning, their first years were bad. Peyton Manning says he's really looking forward to somebody breaking his record. And that's 28 interceptions in the season, I believe, is the record. You know, maybe Anthony Richardson, a fellow Colts quarterback, might be able to do that. Because I remember Aikman and Peyton Manning, they just absolutely got obliterated, especially Aikman. But somehow survived, and then, of course, ended up having a pretty good career.
Hall of Famers.
Yes, sir.
Them, so.
Not bad. Won some rings, that's for sure. Let's see. K-State in focus. It's time for K-State in Focus. Our focus on Kansas State athletics, brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. K-State men's basketball team currently on a trip to Israel as they played their first game in Tel Aviv yesterday. K-State winning 94-87 over the Israeli select team. Creighton transfer Arthur Kaluma led the way. Five players in double figures. Kaluma had 23. Cam Carter, Brown Smoller, we had him on, you know, after the season last year, and he thought Cam Carter is a guy that could have a breakout year. He had double-double, 17 points, 10 rebounds. North Texas transfer guard Tyler Perry added 17. K-State now will play two more more games in Dubai on Thursday and Friday. David Gasson is not with the team. He is actually playing for, is it the Netherlands he's
Netherlands,
playing for?
Yeah.
And he's doing very well. Yeah. And that'll be really, that's great competition for him. So that'll help K-State as well. Let's hear from Jerome Tang, his thoughts on the win yesterday over in Israel.
Super excited that we got the win. The goal was to try and get everybody in, let everyone get some minutes, try and see the young guys, and a little bit there our competitiveness kicked in and we was trying to figure out how to win it. So but was pleased with the outcome, and you know, this we're going to learn more about our team off the court than we're going to learn on the floor, and so that's important to us. So it's been a great experience so far. Both Arthur and TP are here for a reason, right? We expect them to be major contributors and all Big 12 type players, and you know, they showed a glimpse of some stuff they can do, and they're learning something new and how to play differently and play with new teammates. So, you know, we're going to have some bumps in the road, but I thought for the most part they played really well. Really pleased with how RJ responded in the second half. You know, we're going to switch lineups almost every half just to give different guys a chance to start a half. And but RJ did a great job of responding to that.
So K-State wins that first exhibition game over in Israel, 94-87. Thoughts from head coach Jerome Tang entering his second year with the Wildcats. Our focus on K-State athletics brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. And he picks up a commitment as well.
Yeah, from Samford, Quace, I believe is how I say his name.
Glover.
It was like Quace Glover. Yeah, mm-hmm. He averaged like 19 as a junior, but went down to about 14 last year. Can distribute. I watched some of his highlights last night because I was trying to figure out how to say his name. Mm-hmm. So I was watching this about 2.5-3 minute highlight reel. He's quick. Very, very quick, and looks like a type of guard that'll fit in with what they've got, right? Like I was saying at the end of the year last year when we knew Marquise Noel was gone, right? Like you're not going to be able to replace him with one dude, right? But I think when you look at Tyler Perry, and if he can add this dude's quickness to that and everything that they could do, they could, I mean, if he can have that kind of success in the Big 12 at K-State, he's a good-looking player. There's no doubt about
that. He can play this year?
Yeah.
That's a late ad.
Yeah, well, and they've been looking for that late ad, right? Mm-hmm. He was going to go to BYU. He's a grad transfer, so he's got 1 year left. Played first 2 years of his career at Florida with Keontae Johnson, was his teammate, right?
Yeah.
And then went to Samford for 2 years. And then, yeah, he was originally set to go to BYU, and then K-State still needed one more that they needed to have, and they got it. And we'll see if he can gel and fit in with what they're doing. Add all that to Cam Carter, who, man, if he could, you know, become a player like he played yesterday, right?
Yeah.
Give you some double doubles every now and then, that could be a difference maker as well. So, yeah, they've got the guys, they're ready to go, and this should be a pretty good addition to the team.
Yeah, and he has 1 year left, and so, yeah, that adds some depth for this K-State basketball team. Focus on K-State, brought to you, as always, every Wednesday by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. Now, their sister, their brother, whatever you want to say, down the road in Lawrence. I didn't say big brother, little brother, little sister, big sister. I just said brother, sister, whatever, way you want to look at it. Kay, you made some noise and news. The University of Kansas and KU Athletics yesterday announced the latest plans for the Transformational Gateway District, which will feature a reimagined David Booth Kansas Memorial Stadium, a new conference center, and multi-use facilities that will enable year-round use and drive economic development in Lawrence. Plans for the district also include a combination of new retail, dining, and other amenities that will drive student recruitment and enhance the campus experience for KU students and employees. All the renderings, the architectural renderings, and the plans for the district shared yesterday at an event at the Jayhawk Welcome Center. And then in regards to the football stadium, there's going to be phase one, phase two, and phase three. And this thing will, they'll start after this season on the football stadium, and it won't be done even by the end of next season.
No.
So we're talking 2025.
Yep.
So it's going to take some time, and there's going to be some headaches and pains, as there is with any construction.
Absolutely.
I guarantee there'll be KU fans complaining about parking or who knows what else, just like every other fan base. But so that's coming. Be prepared for that. But big news out of KU yesterday. Okay, so we know KU and K-State, they are members of the Big 12. The Big 12 is, making some news today because Nelly's going to perform a Super Bowl-like halftime show on ABC at the Big 12 title game December 2nd, AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas. Kickoff is going to be, of course, at 11 a.m. noon Eastern time. And we both know that it's going to be KU and K-State playing for the Big 12 championship in Arlington.
Yeah.
That's, everybody knows that. Right.
So, yeah, we're all, as fans of the Kansas schools, looking forward to seeing this Nelly concert.
Yeah, I mean, there's tons of diehard Nelly fans in the state of Kansas. I mean, millions upon millions.
If this was 20 years ago, I would be all over that. Yeah, like, man, how do I get tickets to this game? Because I do want to see this concert.
Yeah, it'll still be good, though, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, I would. Listen, if K-State attended, I would not be leaving my seat at halftime.
Yeah. So Brett Yarmark appears the magic number of the Big 12 is 16. That's how many teams will make up the Big 12 next season when Arizona State, Arizona, Utah, and Colorado leave the Pac-12 for a more stable conference come 2024. Of course, OU and Texas will be done and in the SEC next year. Those 16 teams come from 10 different states over four time zones when you count Arizona when they don't or do observe daylight savings time. I think they don't. The conference footprint ranges far east as West Virginia and Florida to as far west as Arizona. Big 12 Commissioner Brett Yarmark said yesterday there are no plans to bring in additional members. Right now, we're done, Yarmark said. When asked about further expansion, we had a vision, we had a strategy, and effectively, we've been able to execute it. Initially, I wasn't sure if we'd go to 14 or 16. I think 16 was kind of a dream scenario. So from our perspective, our focus now is to integrate the four incoming schools as quickly as we can, get them comfortable. We feel good about the future and what our membership composition looks like when you look at it in terms of where we were, where we are, and where we're going. Now, there have been lots of stories out there about maybe they're not done and they might just add Gonzaga and UConn basketball only schools and have 18 in basketball, 16 in football. And there was talk that if they didn't add these four schools here from the Pac-12, that maybe they would add Gonzaga and UConn basketball only and have 14 and have a 12-team football league. Yarmark addressed that yesterday in a podcast in regards to UConn and Gonzaga.
Well, right now, you know, I did have conversations with UConn and Gonzaga, and unfortunately, you know, things didn't work out only because, you know, the dream scenario unfolded for us. So those conversations, you know, are no longer. I'm a big admirer of both those programs. They're fantastic for all the right reasons. But right now, you know, I'm focused on the transition of those four in right now. And also, how do I leverage the fact that, you know, I'm now a 16-team league in 10 states with 90 million people in four different time zones. So that's my focus right now.
Makes sense to me. You know, I think sometimes you can grow and get big too quick. And obviously, there's a ton of change. You got four new ones now in their first year.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have four new ones next year in their first year in the conference. And then you will have your first year living without Oklahoma, Texas after this season in 2024. So, and then you're going to figure out the scheduling part. That's going to be a challenge. Just, I mean, it's not maybe as big as challenge as the Big Ten's going to deal with, but still going to be a challenge if you're dealing with three or four time zones. So it makes total sense to me. Take a breather. And by the way, who's out there that the Big 12 should grab now anyway? Notre Dame is going to stay independent.
Yeah.
And football. Florida State was a whole bunch of hot air, and many people believe that was just a ploy to get the ACC to, you know, maybe give them more of the pie, because it doesn't seem like the SEC is sitting here going, please come join us.
Yeah.
So it looks like they'll stay in the ACC at least for another year or two. And, you know, if that's the case, then Clemson's probably staying, and there's a horrible, horrible major exit fee for any school to leave the ACC. So, I mean, Oregon State and Washington State, that obviously that doesn't add a lot, apparently, because they're not part of the Big 12. San Diego State, there were rumors they talked to them, but adding them now wouldn't make any sense. You want an even amount of teams, so if you have 16, you're going to go to 18. You don't want to go to 17. I mean, to me, what stood out to me in his comments was when he said dream scenario. That's what stood out to me. Those are the words that jumped out at me. Like, that was the dream scenario. Like, I mean, it's a really good scenario. Those are four that they've targeted. But to me, the dream scenario would have been you got Oregon and Washington.
Yeah, I think dream scenario is probably the number and not necessarily the schools.
Yeah.
But
well, said how it unfolded.
But by getting to that point and getting to the number he wanted and actually adding all those schools, he can make it all look right.
Right.
Because he's not going to say, I mean, he's not going to like, you know, talk down to Arizona and Arizona State here.
Well, but he didn't have to say dream scenario.
Yeah.
He could have just said, well, all things lined up pretty nicely for us. When he said dream scenario, that made me, it made it sound like this was our best case scenario and we got it.
Yeah.
And that
and would, man, and maybe it, he and, knew in the back of his mind that Big Ten was going to be end up getting Oregon and Washington anyway.
And they didn't
so
have much
dream
of a
scenario
chance.
For the Big 12 is
right. This is the best
four schools,
yeah.
right?
And that's what I was going to say next is he obviously is privy to this way more than we are. So he probably knew deep down that Oregon and Washington were kind of joined at the hip and that they weren't going to, Big 12 weren't going to get those two anyway. Because the Big Ten would jump on him, and he knew Oregon had interest in the Big Ten. So that might be like the ultimate dream scenario to me would have been obviously getting Oregon and Washington too. But I agree with you. I think when he says the dream scenario unfolded, it's we got an even amount of numbers. Colorado came, then the rest came. We got them. We get to 16, and those were ones we targeted before that were realistic, you know? So this is the best case scenario that we could come up with out of this deal. I think the ultimate dream scenario would have been Oregon and Washington, but maybe that wasn't even possible to even be a dream for all we know.
And I mean, this group of Colorado, Utah, Arizona, Arizona State was what everybody was talking about
for
really
a long
from
time.
The get-go, right? Like when we started talking about, hey, these teams from the Pac-12 might come to the Big 12. And those were the four that were always being discussed.
Right.
And, you know, Oregon and Washington came in late. People started talking about them because they weren't going anywhere. Mm-hmm. And it looked like the Pac-12 was going to dissolve, and there was no real news on Oregon and Washington.
Right.
Yet. Well, I think it was probably in the back of everybody's mind, in the back of the Big Ten's mind, like if you guys fall apart, mm-hmm. we'll take you.
Yeah.
But right now, we're just USC, UCLA.
We're
but
good.
If this move that we've just made as the Big Ten makes your conference fall apart, mm-hmm. Oregon, Washington, we want you to just hold out and we'll see how it goes.
Part of the thing, too, there is USC and UCLA, when they joined the Big Ten, from what I've read, is they really didn't want Oregon, Washington, because then they could, you know, be in the Big Ten and have the West Coast side of things. And I think really the only scenario where Oregon, Washington would be allowed to join was the scenario we saw, the Pac-12 fall apart. Now, because the Pac-12 wasn't going to fall apart, USC and UCLA be like, well, just keep them over there in the Pac-12. That's fine. But once it started falling apart, it's like, eh, okay, we probably should go along with this.
Yeah.
And then they've got, you know, regional rivalries there, and travel might not be as won't be as bad if you can have some kind of pod system over there. So
I just want to say one thing real quick. What stood out to me about those comments is the part where it's like, yeah, I talked to Connecticut and Gonzaga, and they just, you know, it doesn't make sense anymore because we got dream scenario.
Yeah.
When you actually listen to that and understand, this just further proves what drives conference realignment, right? You can have one of the best basketball programs in the nation, and it does not matter.
Mm-hmm.
And so
it's the backup
just
plan.
For the people that like are always saying, oh, well, we got a good basketball mm-hmm. program, they'll probably take us. Nah, mm-hmm. it's not what it means.
No.
It's not what this is. Right. Not what any of this is.
Yeah.
We've been saying that for forever, mm-hmm. but when you come out and hear a commissioner make a comment like that, mm-hmm. they just, it's not viable. It's like, it's not part of what's going to work for us anymore because mm-hmm. we got our dream scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And dream scenario. Arizona State, not a basketball program.
No.
I mean, Colorado, not a basketball program. I mean, Utah and Arizona obviously
Utah really isn't either.
Some basketball success in the past, right?
Yeah, but Utah
Arizona's
been a while.
The only one that you would call a basketball program, right?
Exactly.
Out of that, the group of four that came in.
Right.
You know, it's been a while since Michael Doliak played at Utah, right?
But I will say, in fairness, though, if somebody's listening to you and taking what you're saying word by word, somebody could come back and say, yeah, well, what does Arizona State bring football-wise? What does Colorado bring? They're 1-11 last year. You know, other than Deion Sanders, what does Colorado bring to the table football-wise? Arizona is nothing special. I mean, they've improved. So
and they
Utah,
don't bring success, but they bring
Well, yeah, but the point
what they're talking about with TV sets and things,
right,
people are still watching their football teams, right?
Right, but the point that people are saying is like, well, okay, these basketball programs, you know, either good or they're not good, whatever, you talk about football. Well, none of these football programs, you jump out and go, wow, they're unbelievable. I mean, Utah's won the Pac-12 the last 2 years, but you're right. It's about people watch football. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
It's what, who watches it, regardless of how good the teams are, and that's more TV sets, obviously,
yeah,
in those, you know, time zones, whatever the case may be. So, yep, you're absolutely right about all of that. Good news, Justin Ross is jogging down the path and ready for practice today.
All right, well, don't play Saturday.
Yeah, okay. Dusty doesn't want anybody to play. Chiefs are going to forfeit the game in Arizona Saturday.
If you have anything remotely wrong with you, do not be on the field on
Saturday.
Let's
just play the third stringers, four stringers, all game long.
If Paula Dukin or however you say his name, if they want to start him at quarterback, I'm fine with it.
The guy that threw the bad screen?
Yeah, I don't care.
Oh, man, I'm cool with that, too, actually. I'm good. I let Blaine Gabbert play. Actually,
yeah,
I'd Shane
Bichelle. And then let old Duke play the second half.
I'd have Mahomes, Bichelle, maybe not even play either. I need two quarterbacks just in case Mahomes gets hurt, and I'll let Gabbert play the whole game. That's just me. I'm not sold on Gabbert yet, but we shall see. Maybe it's just because I don't like Missouri. But anyway, he's where he's
from.
Hey,
you dealt with Chase Daniel on this team for that long, so.
Yeah, but he just seems cooler. I don't know. It's just something. Chase Daniel, I don't know.
He did seem like just a regular Joe dude, right? Like,
happy to cash those checks.
I was like, because I just always remember when he went to the Bears and he went around and did that.
Yeah.
He was trying to get Trubisky's autograph and acting like a fan and everything like that. He did seem like a pretty fun guy.
Yeah.
But, he made a lot of money not throwing a lot of passes in the league.
Who's he with now? Is he still in the league? I don't know if he is. I got to double check that because, I mean, surely, I thought he was. I thought he was still
Because I thought, you know, when Henny retired, I'm like, they'll probably just go sign Chase Daniel again.
Right.
As a just kind of a joke in my mind, but I don't know if he's still playing or still on a roster because he's not playing.
It says here, not officially retired as of 4 days ago, so I would assume it says Chargers.
Yeah, I thought he might have went back to the Chargers.
He is a free agent, so okay. He was with the Chargers last year.
Chargers at one point, yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. Anyway, he's made a lot of money just to be a backup. He's 36. 36. Had a heck of a college career. You know, speaking of that, you know, Chase Daniel, undersized quarterback at Missouri, had a ton of success. Went to the NFL. He's played in the league for 15 years. Granted, he hasn't thrown a lot of passes. He's made good money. You know, there was a little talk there for many years. You got to be a taller quarterback. Well, there's a lot of guys that have, you know, Russell Wilson's not a tall quarterback. He's done very well. And there's many since then. But I saw some highlights yesterday that somebody posted of Todd Reesing. People don't, like, I'm watching these highlights of Todd Reesing. And, of course, the highlights of Michael Bishop are amazing, watching K-State and Michael Bishop, even L. Roberson. And then I see the highlights of Todd Reesing and some of the things he was doing. And everybody, and listen, this is no shot at Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes is unbelievable to watch. He makes amazing plays. But I'm watching this highlight clip of Todd Reesing, and I remember he was really good, and KU won the Orange Bowl. I mean, he was amazing. But I forgot how many times he looked like Patrick Mahomes before Mahomes. I mean, he got away from guys. He was spinning in circles. He would make plays. He'd throw off balance deep down the field where you're not supposed to. I mean, you know, there is a misnomer out there that Mahomes is the first to do all this stuff. He is the first to do all this stuff consistently right off the bat to start his career in the NFL. That's true. But some of the plays he makes, people that kind of take shots at the national media, like, oh, yeah, if this guy made this play instead of Mahomes, it'd be all over Twitter. And they're kind of right. I mean, Shane Bichelle made an amazing play. Trevor Lawrence made an amazing play in the game against the Cowboys. Insane play for a touchdown. Got away to pass rush. I mean, if that was Mahomes, it would have been all over. But it wasn't. It was Trevor Lawrence, even though he's a popular dude. He's, you know, so forth and so on. But Todd Reesing was making Mahomes-like plays before Mahomes was even at Texas Tech. When I look at these highlights, you know, L. Roberson was making some of these plays. And Michael Bishop was making some of these plays. So a lot of people think that all this stuff started with Mahomes. And not really. Not necessarily. The type of play, not necessarily. Now, the no-look passes, yes, that might be more Mahomes. But the scrambling, throwing across your body, getting away from a whole bunch of people, running in circles, going, oh, God, he's going to get sacked for 12 yards because quarterbacks way back in the day weren't mobile. And, I mean, Reesing, I mean, Daniel wasn't as good a running quarterback as Reesing, but Daniel was able to get away from pressure and make some plays with his legs. You know, Brad Smith at Missouri was a dual-threat quarterback, and he's a very good quarterback. You know, I mean, Cordell Stewart, we can go back, think about the Colorado days. There's a lot of quarterbacks I can think, Dusty, from 20 years ago that were very good at running, escaping, making plays, keeping them alive, and had pretty good arms.
Yeah.
And we sit here and we act like this is the whole new generation of quarterbacks, maybe because of the consistency of the success they've had at the NFL level.
That's
I know Brad Smith hasn't had that success, obviously never did. I know Todd Reesing didn't, and he's too small, so forth. And Chase Daniels has been a backup. Cordell Stewart played in the league for a while as quarterback and then ended up being a wide receiver. I get all that. And maybe that's the distinction we got to make. But
it is.
In regards to the plays that are made, I mean, Reesing and Bishop and Roberson and Brad Smith and Cordell Stewart, they were making some very similar plays that Mahomes was making at Texas Tech. It's just that Mahomes has parlayed that into he's more consistent, he's more athletic, he's taller, that helps. And he's in a great system. He's with a great coach, great organization. He's got his weapons, but he makes people around him better as well. But the things that make him over the top is, oh, he's going to throw the behind the back. The left-handed pass on a Monday night football game in Denver. The no-look throw it over your shoulder to McKinnon last year down the sideline. The no-look pass against the Ravens. Those plays, now I'm not going to say Todd Reesing, Brad Smith, and Michael Bishop made those. They didn't. And that's probably what distinguishes them. But when I was watching this highlight reel yesterday, I'm like, man, that looks a lot like Mahomes the first play where I knew that we were going to be okay as a Chiefs fan, all right? And I was on board with Mahomes getting the keys of the car, and I was in the minority at the time. I was screaming, you turn it over. Well, how do you do that? Alex Smith's number one rated quarterback. Yeah, but if you want to win a Super Bowl, it's time to change because this is as far as we're going to go. And I remember we went down, actually, my son and I, went down, my oldest. We stopped at a place to eat in Wichita on a Sunday. As we came back, we went to Oklahoma football game on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. We stayed in Norman on Saturday night, and we came back on Sunday. And we stopped to eat somewhere there in Wichita. Twin Peaks. Twin Peaks is, you know, got to break in the sun, you know.
So he's like, nice parenting, Wade.
All right.
Nice parenting.
That ship sailed a long time ago. I'm not winning parent of the year.
I'm just like that person that's listening right now, you know, nice parenting.
Yeah, well.
That's not from me.
Yeah. I've got some terms, but I can't repeat on the radio to the people that think, judging me as a parent. I don't care what you think of me as a parent, okay?
Nobody does.
And you shouldn't. And I shouldn't care about how you are a parent either. until you got your house in order, don't judge me. I'm not going to win parent of the year anytime soon or ever, in fact. That's for sure. That's a fact. But anyway, I remember the waitress, she messed with him because he was probably... Well, this would have been seven. Was it Mahomes' first year as a starter 17 or 18? 18?
18 was his first year.
Okay, so 18, not 5 years ago. So my son would have been 11 or 12 at the time. So the blonde waitress was, she actually like rubbed his head, and it was so funny. Like, she messed with him. It was pretty good stuff. But anyway, the Chiefs Niner game was on the TV at Twin Peaks. And I mean, this was early in the season. It wasn't the first game of the season. And my two favorite teams.
Third or fourth.
I think so. It was early, but not the first one.
Yeah.
And because the first one wasn't. Was that Pittsburgh? I mean, he went on the road and lit up Pittsburgh. The
first one.
Was a home game first one?
First one was L.A., I believe.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And then Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh.
And then I believe.
San Francisco's first home game for Mahomes, we believe. But,
yeah, I believe so.
But the play, and you've seen it 1,000 times, and he's made so many unbelievable plays in his career already. But when he retreats 15 yards and he plays like you're playing recess, I remember the days where you just run around and take forever to throw the ball because you want to make sure the guy's wide open.
Yeah.
And that play, and he threw a touchdown pass to
Chris Conley,
and that put him up 21-7 against the Niners. The Niners had a good defense. And I saw that play, and I was going nuts at Twin Peaks. I was just like, absolutely. Oh, dear Lord. And that was the play where I was like, this was the right decision. I mean, I felt like it was all along. But that confirmed it for me. That's when I saw that play, I'm like, that's it. Well, Todd Reesing was making very similar plays in these highlight reels I was watching.
Yeah.
It's just he did in college instead of the pros. But I think sometimes we forget how good some of these guys were. And we act like everybody before Mahomes was chop liver. No, there is a lot of good quarterbacks before Mahomes.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking to guys staying in the pocket. I'm talking there are a lot of mobile quarterbacks. It's just that the NFL has given them more chances because some of these guys have ended up being, one, they're smart enough to handle it. You know, the playbook. If you watch the quarterback Netflix series, you got to be a smart guy to play quarterback. There's no doubt, especially in the NFL. So And now you're seeing Anthony Richardson, we're talking about earlier, dual threat quarterback. You know, we know Lamar Jackson's a dual threat quarterback. Josh Allen's a dual threat quarterback. We can go down the line. Jalen Hurts, obviously, who was benched at Alabama for crying out loud, is now one of the top quarterbacks in the league, one of the highest paid guys. I go on and on. There's probably half the league now has a dual threat quarterback, or at least capable of making some plays with their legs instead of the old, pocket crumbles. He's going down.
Yeah.
If his first, second, third read ain't there, okay, that's a sack.
Yeah.
And it's called extending plays. But absolutely, there are a lot of guys that did it. Roberson, Bishop, Reesing, Brad Smith come to my mind right back. Cordell Stewart, and obviously Patrick Mahomes does it as well as anybody.
There's a lot to unpack on that, I feel like. Sure. Because, by the way, yeah, this L.A. and Pittsburgh were on the road to start that season.
He lit up
the
Pittsburgh.
49ers, yeah, six. I think he had 10 touchdowns the first 2 weeks.
He said six, I think, or five against the Steelers.
Six against the Steelers.
I think it was Steelers, and they're up like 28-0. And, of course, the knock on the Chiefs was they couldn't beat the Steelers. And then all of a sudden Mahomes makes it look easy in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, then, we're going
to
be good.
Yeah, and then they came home to play San Francisco, and just takes a snap, rolls all the way over to the left side of the field, and then comes back to the right and finds Conley.
He almost went sideline to sideline.
It was almost, yeah. Mm-hmm. They had a graphic like 3 minutes after the touchdown of just like the X's and O's on the mm-hmm. field. You couldn't see the players, but it was just showing where like his travel path that he had the whole play, and it was like, this is stupid.
Mm-hmm. Right? It is.
Nobody should be doing this in the NFL. And because we had already kind of found out that dude could throw touchdown passes, right? And he did some things in the first 2 weeks that you're like, oh, okay, well, I like this guy. And then that play, everybody will ask you, actually, I saw it on Twitter again a couple weeks back, right? Mm-hmm. What was the first play you remember that Patrick Mahomes was him, as they say right now, right? Mm-hmm. And I just took a screen recording of that touchdown and put it on Twitter. That was my answer. And didn't say anything. I just put the video up and said, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're both the same on that. Like, and I think a lot of Chiefs fans are, right?
Yes.
This was the moment that we knew that, okay, this dude's different.
Mm-hmm.
The part about that, though, of when you're talking about like Todd Reesing, Brad Smith, Michael Bishop was a little bit before that. L. Roberson was around the same time-ish.
Sure.
Of when those guys were playing, is that the NFL didn't draft quarterbacks like that.
That's
the NFL
right.
didn't allow quarterbacks
right.
to play like that.
Because they didn't
Michael
think it would
Vick
translate.
Was really the only
yes,
one.
Vick is the one that really
from
changed
Virginia
stuff.
Tech that mm-hmm. came into the NFL and was actually able to do what
right.
he was able to do in college and translate it to the NFL. That and I don't necessarily think that was because he's the only one that could do it. I think he was the first one that a team actually took the chance on mm-hmm. and let him do it, right?
Well, he
the
was Falcons, such an amazing yeah, talent.
And the Falcons let him do it, right? Mm-hmm. And they let him do everything like that. And then what was the knock after that? Well, he can't hold up playing like that his whole
right.
career. Like, he's going to have to do some – ran into some legal problems, obviously, that slowed down his career.
Dogfighting.
And then there really wasn't another one that came real fast after Michael Vick. Mm-hmm. Now, Lamar Jackson comes into the league mm-hmm. and kind of changes a lot of what they're doing. Tim Tebow, I think, changed a little bit about, like, the mentality of a guy that you should get. You knew that Tim Tebow wasn't going to be a quarterback that could throw for you,
mm-hmm.
but the success that he actually had for a little bit of time
mm-hmm.
running the option and running the football as a quarterback with the Broncos and actually leading them to the playoffs,
mm-hmm.
I think people kind of understood, hey, if we do this the right way
mm-hmm.
and we get a mobile quarterback that can throw as well, that this can actually work in this league. And it took a while to get there. It took a long while to get there.
RG3 was given an opportunity.
RG, yeah,
if Mike Shannon doesn't, run him into the ground and end his career, and that's what he basically did, when putting him out there when he shouldn't have been.
Exactly.
I mean, that was a guy that you didn't think he'd hold up because he wasn't, big enough physically. But maybe if he could avoid those injuries early in his career, he might have bulked up and he maybe could have made it. But he was one of the few there after the Vic era that got that shot.
Yeah, and had the chance. And now it's like, okay, let's find a guy that can do a lot for us.
So
Jalen Hurts is a guy like, right, that, hey, maybe he's not the best passer yet at this level, but if he showed some flashes and showed that he could do some of that in the college game, then we can work with him on that part of it, or vice versa, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe if he's not like the best runner, but we can put him in situations and positions to where he can use his quickness and elusiveness and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
If Michael Bishop had the brain, he could definitely play in today's NFL a whole lot and be very, very successful. But Michael Bishop, I don't think, would have had the wherewithal to do what these guys, as you're watching quarterback, right, and understanding what they need to do as a starting quarterback in the NFL. But I think a guy like Todd Reesing probably could have done it if he'd been given the chance and played in this day and age, right? Like, there's different – it's just a different – era. And they're actually giving these guys
chances. Well, Doug Flutie was
it.
Kind of the first small quarterback, short quarterback that had some success.
Yeah.
Reesing was compared to him at times. I'm going to go through these one by one. You tell me if it's a dual threat quarterback or not. And we're going to keep track. You ready?
Yes.
Bills, Josh Allen.
Yes.
Absolutely. There's no. I don't know why you hesitate. He is.
It's just he's a weird. He's not the prototypical guy you think of when you think of it. But
he
is.
Runs the ball a lot.
For sure.
So he's a dual threat. Aaron Rodgers.
Yes.
You think he's a dual threat?
Not anymore. Probably. I'm gonna say no.
I would say no on that.
Yeah.
One.
Now I'll say no. He could run. He could be elusive and.
Tua, with the Dolphins.
I'm going to say no right now.
I agree. Mac Jones of the Patriots, I say no. Kenny Pickett of the Steelers?
No.
Lamar Jackson, yes.
Yes.
Deshaun Watson?
Yes.
Joe Burrow?
No.
I don't. One of the Texans, C.J. Stroud, no right now.
Yeah, you just don't see that yet.
Trevor Lawrence?
Man, he's like kind of right in the middle of it for me. I think he could be, but I'm going to say no right now.
Okay. Anthony Richardson, yes.
Yeah.
The Titans have Tannehill. He runs the ball quite a bit.
Yeah. He would be like geared a little toward the Josh Allen type.
Yeah. I'll say
so,
it is.
Yeah.
Who's the Raiders quarterback? Oh, Garoppolo. No. Herbert. He's kind of marginal, isn't it?
I would say no right now on him.
Russell Wilson, yes.
Yes.
There's six. Mahomes, I say yes.
But
then people say, well, then why isn't Herbert? But I'll say so we got seven?
Yeah.
Who's the Commanders quarterback?
Good question.
I don't even remember.
We'll come back to that when I look
it
up.
Yeah, look it up. Jalen Hurts, yes.
Yes.
That's eight. Dak Prescott, I don't think is a dual threat. Daniel Jones, absolutely. That's nine. Jared Goff, no. Jared Love, I would say yes. There's 10.
Yeah, Jordan Love. You could.
Justin Fields, without question.
Oh, yeah.
Justin Fields, there's 11. Kirk Cousins, I'd say no.
No.
Oh, God. Who's the Falcons quarterback this year? I know it's not Marcus Mariota.
No.
Because of the quarterback.
Commanders, by the way, is Sam Howell.
That's what I was going to say, but I didn't think he was a starter. And he can run. That's 12.
There's nobody else.
He's a dual threat.
Unless they start Jacoby Brissett.
I think I go with that. There's 12. I'll say he's a dual threat. Who's the Falcons quarterback
this year?
Look
that up right now.
Did they draft somebody? 12. Or is it Ritter? If it's Ritter, it's...
Yes, it should be Ritter,
then that's two.
Yeah.
That's 13. The Saints quarterback is Derek Carr. I'd say no. Baker Mayfield, no. Bryce Young, yes. There's 14. Geno Smith, he doesn't really run the ball a lot. I don't know if I'd say Geno Smith. Would you say Geno Smith's a dual threat quarterback?
No, not right now.
Kyler Murray obviously is.
Yeah.
Matthew Stafford, not. And Brock Purdy? Trey Lance would be.
Trey, yeah.
But he's not starting. So what?
And I think if he talked about Baker early in his career, you'd probably put him on this
list.
Well,
that's right? True. That's true. That's a good point.
I don't think right now you do, but I think Baker Mayfield, as when he was picked.
Yeah.
And the way he played in college would absolutely fall underneath that.
So if you count Baker, that's 16. So 16 of the 32, that's half. And we have a few that might be marginal. Of the 16 that we don't think are dual-threat quarterbacks, I would say 10 of them can definitely make plays.
It's
like Aaron Rodgers, like what was another one that I had here that would be on this list? Herbert, Herbert would be one. You know, Derek Carr sometimes can. I mean, all those guys they can actually make some plays out of the pocket. There's not a lot of quarterbacks that I can sit here and say they can't make plays out of the pocket. About every single, like Tua can.
Like Mac Jones would be a guy that I'm like,
Kenny Pickett can.
I don't want him running the football.
of all the guys that I think of that are old school, sit in the pocket quarterbacks, to me, it's Mac Jones.
Yeah.
Because Burrow, I think, moves around more. But Mac Jones moves.
And Stafford, right? Stafford's not going to be a guy.
Yeah. Garoppolo doesn't run a lot either.
If he needs to get a couple hard yards for you, he might try to do it.
Yeah.
But,
Garoppolo doesn't run a lot either. But
no.
So what we're saying is the league has changed over the years with quarterbacks, and that
very
proves
much.
It. That proves it quite a bit. So, and now Anthony Richardson's going to be starting day one. Okay, end with this pretty weird story. How many times have we heard these stories over the last so many years? Some kind of weird, abnormal, bad fan interaction with the athlete, right? We've heard it a ton of times.
Yeah.
Fans going after players, players going into the stands, players getting mixed up in back and forth on social media. Well, here's an interaction that's pretty weird and odd, but yet kind of cool. There's a new baby girl in the world named for Mookie Betts, the outstanding outfielder for the L.A. Dodgers, used to be with the Red Sox. The Dodgers slugger was in the on-deck circle awaiting his at-bat at a home game on August 2nd against the A's. A fan told Betts that if he hit a home run, the man would give his soon-to-be-born daughter the middle name of Mookie. And you know what happened? Mookie hit a 436-foot home run. I'll let Mookie Betts explain the rest.
What's going on, guys? I just, something pretty neat happened, and I wanted to share this story. So back a couple weeks ago, I was on deck, and this guy was started talking to me, and he said, "Mook, if you hit a home run, I'll name my daughter her middle name Mookie." And I heard this, and I laughed, and he said he was serious. And so I turned around and told him, "Nah, don't do that, bro. Don't do that." And he said, "No, I'm going to do it." And says, "Your wife wouldn't like that, bro. Don't do that." He said, "No, I'm going to tell her." So I think he may have been on the phone with her. So then that at bat is when I hit, I think, the furthest home run I've hit in my career. And so I circle the bases, come back, and give him a fist bump. There's a little video of it. I thought it was super cool. And then, like, a couple weeks later, I see on Twitter the birth certificate for Francesca Mookie Mancuso. Shout out to you, Giuseppe. I can't wait to meet Francesca. And that's going to be my girl. That's going to be my girl. So I thought that was pretty neat. Y'all go follow Little Ragu 54. Again, shout out to you, Giuseppe.
That is so wild. Now, there's going to be, when this girl, and it's a girl, has a middle name Mookie, that's going to be made fun of her if it gets released eventually, but at the same time, it could be really cool. But when you get down the line, when she's 25, people are going to like, who's Mookie Betts? It's like, now, who's Bo Jackson, you know? But what a cool story that is. Like, Mookie's giving him every single chance, the soon-to-be dad, an out. Like, "Hey, man, you don't want to do that." "No, I'm going to call my wife. It'll be good." "No, man." And then he's like, "No, well, surely he didn't actually go through with it." And then he sees the birth certificate and everything. That was a really, I thought, unusual, odd, but cool story.
Yeah, and he's probably like, "You're putting pressure on me to hit a home run here, too."
And then he drills it.
And then he does it. And he's like, "Well, I'm," and then he's probably like, goes up there like, "I'm not going to hit a home run anyway. He doesn't need to, he don't need to worry about it." And then, boom, it's gone. And the rest is history, as they say, right?
Yeah. It was one of his longest home runs of the year, 436 feet. So, yeah, Mookie Betts now has a little baby girl. Her middle name is named after Mookie. Her name, middle name is Mookie. Francesca Mookie Giuseppe, or Mancuso. That's what it was. Mancuso. Dad's name is Giuseppe.
Giuseppe, yeah.
That's a, well, that's a wild name.
Yeah.
I wonder what mom thought about that when dad said, like, did she go, "Oh, yeah, sounds like a great idea," or "What is wrong with you?" Yeah.
You
but apparently
a,
got her to sign on.
You probably
got to
have a relationship where it's like,
she's got to be a sports
it's
fan.
It's understandable, right?
Right.
Like, this doesn't surprise me that he wants to do this, but you can't name her Mookie. You got it's got to be the middle name.
Yeah.
And he probably cleared it. He might have even tried to clear some of this stuff before
he
even.
He was on the phone after he did this with Mookie Betts.
He
actually was said, "I got her on the phone," and he was like, said, "Yeah, I'll call her now and make sure it's okay."
Yeah. She, I'm guessing the wife was expecting something like this could happen.
Maybe. Maybe.
And maybe not necessarily Mookie, but just some kind of weird, weird thing that he's going to try to pull here with the name.
Mm-hmm. And maybe she's a Dodger fan or a Mookie Betts fan, and she's cool with it anyway. But I'm just going to tell you right now, I may not be parent of the year, as we established a little bit ago, but I will tell you this. My wife would never, ever let me name one of our children Mookie.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.